You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. To the journey. Hello, everybody at home. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
And...
Lori Sears.
We have a great show for you tonight. This is one of my favorite things to do on To the Journey, and that is a character analysis. You may be asking yourself, who, Tristan, and members of To the Journey, who are you going to talk about? And we're going to talk about the man with the great jaw, the great set of hair, and the great flying skills... And not only the flying skills behind the console, but the flying skills with the ladies. And that is Thomas Eugene Paris.
Boom!
There
you
go.
We're going to bring it.
There you go.
We're going to bring it. Now, he is, and I'm not just saying this, I know I say this about so many different characters on the show, but he is legitimately one of my favorite characters. Growing up, I just had this gravitational pull towards the Kirks, the Rikers, and the Paris and the Trips. Those were always my favorite characters. I love the guys who could just get stuff done and be a smartass while they're doing it.
And get the ladies. You like the ladies' men.
That, yeah, they have to be a ladies' men.
These were your role models.
Yes, they were. Now, thankfully, I didn't take every piece of advice from them.
I'm glad you don't put your leg up on everything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do that when I walk into a room. As soon as I see a chair, I just put one leg up. But I don't chase everything on two legs.
That's good. That's good.
Now, okay, what about you guys? Like, is he one of your favorite characters, or is he just kind of okay to you guys?
I like Tom Paris. I don't know if he's a favorite, but I like him. I mean, I like him a lot.
Yeah, that's cool.
Maybe. Oh man, I'd say he'd ranked maybe 3 to 4 on my scale of favorite Voyager characters, behind Janeway and the Doctor.
So are you saying he's like your third or fourth favorite?
Yeah, I mean, depending on where I'm at when I'm watching the series.
Okay,
I mean, if
I gotcha.
I'm watching a lot of really strong Tommy Boy action, I'm thinking, yeah, heck yeah, Tom Paris is cool. I like him. Or if I'm watching him in season 1 where I don't like him as much, and we'll probably have to talk about that in a little more detail, I'm just thinking, oh, God.
Yeah, it totally depends on where in the series you're watching Tom.
Yes,
I think he gets so much stronger as the series goes on, and I really grow to admire the growth that he has.
Definitely, and we're definitely going to talk about that today, because that is one of the key characteristics of this character, is growth, and as it should be with any character, but especially with Tom. Lori, is he one of your favorites, or do you dislike him? Do you dislike him at all? You know, what do you think?
Yeah, I think he probably ranks about the same as you, Char. I like him. I think he had me at yes, ma'am, the first time he said that, because I thought, oh, you good old Southern boy. I love that.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. When did Tom Paris win you guys over? First talk about your first impressions and when he won you over. Now, Laura, you said that he won you over in episode 1. What were your first impressions of him?
I like that, but then I thought, you are such a skeez otherwise. That when he was in that shuttle with that girl, the pilot, the original pilot.
Stoddy, yes.
God, I'm thinking, please, I'd want to get a shower. If I was
Oh, that was so
to
poorly written,
it
too.
It really was.
There was so much sci-fi cheese in that. It was just embedded. Like,
oh, man.
We're all huge Star Trek fans. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all nerds beyond compare. But there's one thing I can't really get on board with. And that's like, I was talking with a friend of mine, a Star Trek friend of mine. And I was like, hey, when you get here? And he's like, ETA, 15 minutes at warp 7. Oh, bringing God. My shuttlecraft in, you know, like stuff like that. And I was just like, oh, I can't
really?
Do that.
So what you're saying is you didn't like the whole dialogue of, do you always fly at women at warp speed, Mr. Paris?
Yeah.
And then
only when
they're
in visual range.
Yeah. That was funny.
Oh.
I'm glad they cut that out.
They didn't cut it out. What are you talking about?
No, not, he like, stopped
not edited
doing
out.
It.
No,
he stopped
just like doing okay.
that. Over time, they did away with that kind of talk.
Okay, I got you. I was like, you weren't watching a deleted scene. This was on the air.
Oh, I know. I remember.
Okay, so Char, how about you? Like, when did he win you over?
Oh, that is really such a good question. I would have to say when he started really genuinely caring for B'Elanna. I think actually what happened, what the turning point was for me was in Blood Fever when, you know, he's actually been wanting to pursue this really serious relationship with B'Elanna for some time now. She's just pushing him off because she, like I think a lot of us at that time, believed that he's just a playboy and he wants to go off with any girl who pretty much wants him, right? And in Blood Fever, she's got the Ponfar bug going, and he easily could have slept with her and then walked right away and kind of maybe gotten what he wanted out of the whole deal. But no, he's a real gentleman about it. He takes B'Elanna far too seriously than just that. He wants more than that. He wants a real relationship, and that's a real man.
That was sweet.
We'll definitely talk more about that when we get to the B'Elanna segment, because you can't talk about Tom without talking about B'Elanna.
Absolutely.
No.
There's just no way, shape, or form you can. But first off, let's talk about his history a little bit, because his history is so important because, as it does with every character, it shapes his personality today. Well, I guess I can't really say today, but he's alive and well in all of the hearts of Trekkies. But so he's the son of an admiral, kind of a hard-nosed commander who wanted his son to be in the in Starfleet from day one. We find out later that Tom actually wanted to be in like the naval service or the Coast Guard or something like that, which I thought was just weird for Tom. That was kind of weird to introduce that out of the blue just for the sake of that episode.
Kind
of
random.
But okay.
And then we find out that he's at the academy and he is the cause of three other students to die in a flight accident. He confesses, and then he gets drummed out of the academy, and then he joins up the Maquis, gets captured on his first assignment, and then he becomes the official Starfleet observer.
Yes.
So that pretty much ruined his life, or so he thought, his career.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all know, the first time we see Robert Duncan McNeil in Star Trek is in The Next Generation, where he plays Nick Locarno in the episode The First Duty. It's essentially the same character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember everybody asks this question constantly whenever you talk about Tom Paris's history. People say, like, why didn't they just call him Nick Locarno? And I think I remember the producers giving some sort of BS reasoning.
Yeah, they're about, like
they didn't want
royalties?
Them to get confused or something.
Yeah, royalties.
No, royalties is the real reason, is what people suspect.
That. Yeah, I don't.
It's,
sorry.
Well, it's because a Star Trek producer did not write that episode, and so writer owned the name Nick Locarno.
Oh, okay.
Right.
And he owned that character. So whenever they used Nick Locarno in Voyager, they would have to give royalties to this writer. So instead, they just slapped on a different name to him.
Yeah.
And the producers just said, no, we wanted him to start fresh so that people who watched wouldn't be confused and can just start with episode one of Voyager and move on. Bullcrap.
Yeah,
sure. Give him the same history, though. That really makes
same history.
Come on. They should have just given the real reason. We would have accepted that. No problem.
Yeah, seriously. Star Trek fans especially can see through producer BS, and this is definitely like one of those times.
Take note, PR folks.
And so it was hard for him at the beginning to quote unquote make friends, because, you know, that's how he became friends with Harry. At least one of the reasons, because Harry's like, I can make my own friends. And people like the Maquis didn't like him. The Starfleet didn't like him. And so he was just kind of ruined from the get-go. But as we all know, he became part of the family.
Absolutely.
But he tried desperately to shake his playboy, bad boy persona. And were you guys sad to see that go? Or were you happy?
No. I was thrilled to see that go.
I was too. I thought they're just trying to redo Riker with a different character. And I was not... really
so
interested
true.
Or satisfied with that. So when they turned him into a real character, I was really happy about it.
But I did love every time, like in the cloud where B'Elanna calls him a pig. That's like my favorite thing.
Oh, well, that was pretty good, yeah.
He was such a pig. Because he was a pig.
He deserved that, yes.
Yes. You're a Absolutely. Pig. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. He's like, did you design this character? Yeah. Why? You're a pig. No, he's a pig, and so are you.
He's a pig, and so are you.
That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a great line.
I don't know. I liked the arc. I mean, I appreciate the Playboy side of him at the beginning. I wasn't sad to see it go, but I'm glad that they had it, because without change, there's no arc. Without arc, you don't
true,
have real storytelling.
True. And that's I don't know, true. If he would have come out being Starfleet's finest.
Boring.
He would have been Harry Kim.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and so,
or at least what Harry Kim was supposed to be.
Right. And so this guy with a little bit of a bad reputation, kind of maybe you could even say at the rock bottom of his life, he's got really nowhere else to go. He's
on
Janeway's whim. Yeah. So it makes sense that they made him this way. But again, I'm not sad that he did eventually break that that image, if you will.
Now, he didn't become family right away. He definitely had some friction with some people, especially Chakotay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We all know that the friction at the beginning was real, but then it turned into be kind of a farce when they were trying to find out who the mole was on Voyager.
Right.
Right.
And I thought that was really opportune moment for Paris and for the writers to use him in that way, because it was a story arc that was kind of had early seeds, and the only person I can think of who would have been able to do that besides Paris would maybe be Neelix. Now, I'm not saying that would have been a good choice. Mm-mm. I'm not saying that
no,
at all.
No, it would have not.
It would have been a horrible choice, but you wouldn't have been able to think of anyone wanting to leave other than Neelix or Tom, just because Neelix doesn't have any really ties there except for Kes, and Tom, he's not accepted by anyone except for Harry. So I really like that about his storyline and his character.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of Harry, that was definitely one of the closest relationships on the ship, and maybe in Star Trek. I mean, the only thing comparable to it maybe would be Miles and Bashir.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't really compare Kirk and Spock, because that's just a completely different dynamic.
Yes, I agree.
It's a bromance, but it's on a different level, you know?
It is. Yeah. Yeah, Tom and Harry were BFFs in a very different way than Kirk and Spock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kirk and Spock were like intimate brotherhood, where like they would fight and die for each other, and Tom and Harry would just like to go to the holodeck together, and
like to have fun together. Yeah, and I mean, that said, that was perfectly cool for what it was. I really enjoyed the contrast that Tom and Harry had, especially in the beginning. I think they needed each other.
Yeah, Harry was so green and he had no one to turn to. And then when he was realized, he was so far away from home. He had to have somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the two worked very well together. Tom could kind of help Harry a little bit with, his social skills. Maybe help him out with some tips for the ladies, those sort of things. Some social graces that he just is not aware of because he's Harry. But then also Harry's discipline, I think, reined Tom in.
Absolutely. I think that's pretty key there they were good counterbalance, kind of like not to the extreme of Quark and Odo, but to the point where they balance each other out. Harry tempered Paris a little, and Tom took Harry out of his shell a little bit. And one of my favorite moments, I don't know why this is one of my favorite moments between the two of them, but when Harry gave him a little wisdom, he said, there's an old Chinese expression.
Oh, my God.
Stay out of harm's way. And then Tom goes, that's not a Chinese expression. He goes, if it works, use it. Like, just even saying it out loud just right now isn't that funny, but for some reason, just the moment and the delivery that Garrett Wong did, it just kind of summed up their relationship rather well.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. In a way, it kind of reminds me of Harold and Kumar in the 24th century.
And not just because he's Asian, right?
No, it doesn't have anything to do with that, but Harry is Harold. And then Tom is Kumar. Because Kumar likes to have fun and party a little bit, and he knows how to have a good time, whereas Harold is a little more straight-laced and sense of duty and, yeah.
Yeah, and Tuvix is Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh, I want to see this.
So many levels. So many levels.
Oh, wow. Ooh. Oh, wow. My gosh. I have a Photoshop project now.
Absolutely.
Yes, you do. Wow.
Now, speaking of the holodeck, because they did love to go to the holodeck together with Bride of Chaotica and several other things, but we should definitely talk about Tom's, not holo addiction, but holo specialities. And
yes.
Next to Tuvok, he was definitely quite the holo novelist. And what were some of your favorite? Well, we all know our favorite.
You just want to bring up Fairhaven, don't you?
No, I wasn't going to bring up Fairhaven.
Yes,
I don't
believe
you.
Yes,
I was
going to
talk about Bride of Chaotica. I was going to talk about Bride of Chaotica.
Right.
I would never presume to think that you guys value Fairhaven over Bride of Chaotica, but...
Yeah, you're right about that.
You should go with that feeling. You really should.
But yes, he made Bride of Chaotica, and Captain Proton, he made... Fairhaven, he remastered the doc's Photons Be Free.
I like that. Photons Be Free remastered.
Yeah, like Photons Be Free redo.
Yes.
And, he was going to help Tuvok with his worst case scenario holo novel.
Yes.
But he didn't actually... He wasn't able to write any code on that one, was he?
No. Well, and didn't he also help Neelix with the resort program? And, of course, Sandrine's, which,
aside from Captain Proton, thank you.
That's my favorite.
Yeah.
I forgot about that, yeah.
Yeah,
you don't like Baywatch? I'm sorry.
I didn't care for Baywatch. I preferred Cheers in France.
Cheers in France and Baywatch in space. That's like TNT's 3 in the morning dream. Right there is to have Baywatch in space, and
we're giving them so many
Cheers
good ideas right now.
I know.
Come on, TNT.
One other thing, speaking of his holo novel specialities, is he was conveniently a 20th century expert
at everything.
Oh yeah, definitely.
At everything, yeah.
Not just 20th century. I mean, if you want to expand upon this, the dude knew a lot about little bits of everything. I mean, he had like a semester of. What was it? Biochemistry or something? And suddenly he's a medic?
Yeah.
Okay, so many times... I'm so glad you brought this up.
We gotta talk about this.
We gotta... For those of you at home, I'm resting my chin in my hand. There's so many times whenever there is a medical emergency, you see people in blue uniforms rush in, carrying people on stretchers into the medical bay. And I'm like, well... Why are they wearing blue? Because they have to be science, because there's literally no other medical professions on there.
Right.
They got the pilot and the 2-year-old alien to be the
medical
staff.
Helping out the holographic doctor.
Yes.
Helping out the holographic doctor.
Right.
And yet, so who are these people that are always Johnny on the spot? They're like, oh, the pilot had a semester of biochem.
He's
I was
the right
an EMT
one for
five
job.
Years,
he's
but
the
whatever.
Most qualified?
That's fine.
Yeah. For real.
Okay, and I understand, if you're a botanist, that's not the same as being a medical doctor, but if you've got some kind of scientific background, you probably have a little more expertise, maybe a little more aptitude than the pilot. Who took remedial stuff at the academy. Okay.
Remedial.
Well, to be fair, I mean, being in Starfleet, you all have a scientific background, so...
True. Okay, you know. Yeah.
But, like, I get what you're saying, like a chemical background or an anatomical background, something related at least to the human body,
not
engineering.
Certainly somebody you would have much more capable to train as a medic than, especially with the pilot, you think you need him maybe in that chair
as the
on
pilot?
The bridge?
Yeah. Hello. Yeah.
Yes, in an emergency, in a triage situation.
Right, especially after the 2-year-old Okampan disappears, suddenly Tommy takes over that role a lot. And he's not piloting quite as much. I mean, he's helping out the doctor a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And in Message in a Bottle, they were scared that Paris was going to have to become the doctor full time.
Really?
Are we serious about this?
No one can see, but I'm just slapping my hand onto my forehead just repeatedly because that's more productive than this idea.
Yeah, like you have probably one of the best pilots in Starfleet, and then you're like, nah, let's make him the doctor.
He's the best darn pilot you could have.
So logical.
Next to Riker, which is basically somewhat of the same character. See, I love pilots. I love the ladies' men. It's all coming together.
All right, yeah.
Now, one woman that took him a little bit longer to woo over, more so than the Delaney sister, would definitely be B'Elanna.
Absolutely.
And we've all had our fantasies of wooing B'Elanna. We all know that.
We have?
Yes, we have. Just go with it.
Oh, okay.
And so that was probably one of my favorite romantic relationships in Star Trek, if not my most favorite romantic relationship in Star Trek. What did you guys think about the B'Elanna-Paris pairing?
I was not, like, all that thrilled about it to begin with, but I warmed to the idea.
Warmed to it. What did you not like at the beginning?
I don't know. They didn't seem like a good match to me. But, you know, as time went on, and I think about Blood Fever, too. I like that. I like the way he treated her, what you pointed out before. Just saying that he was such a gentleman and he was so kind. And I thought, okay, maybe this might work. I don't know. They wrote it really well. They really did.
Yes.
They did a good job.
They did. That's actually why I liked it so much, was they actually wrote this somewhat realistically. Oh my gosh, I mean, they're kind of flirting with each other in the beginning, mm-hmm. and she's playing hard to get. It was kind of cute. And then Blood Fever happens. And then they chase after the warp core or something in spacesuits, yeah. and they're running out of oxygen.
Yes.
And B'Elanna declares her love for him of all times.
I'm going to die. I love you. Yeah, that's it.
I thought that was a little weird at first, but you know what? It, going with Harry's line here, if it works, use it.
Yeah, you're right.
ultimately, it turned into a very awesome relationship. It showed ups and downs. It wasn't the sing-song, oh, sweet, sappy mm-hmm. romance. I mean, they had conflict. They had problems. And I also like that once that they did become an item, they still got to be separate characters as well
right.
as the couple yeah. unit. You know what I mean? Because like,
they weren't always
a lot of times,
together. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't one of those things where if you saw B'Elanna, she was attached to the hip to Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that happens so much once a couple gets together, and it really makes me sick. So I was really pleased that they did not do that with these two.
And I really like that there was a point in time when she outranked Tom.
Yes.
I love that. I love that they had this chief engineer, this woman of power. You don't mess mm-hmm. with her. And she... Like, they were equals in the relationship, but they were still separate people outside of it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I definitely appreciated the time that the writers took to develop their relationship, because it wasn't rushed at all. I mean, a lot of people didn't like the Odo-Kira relationship, but you have to admit, they took their time.
Oh, they totally took their time on that
oh
one.
My
oh, my
gosh.
Goodness.
Forever and ever and a day.
Char, you
spoke of the spacesuits, and... I was watching a show the other day. It's been canceled. It only lasted 2 seasons. It's called Better Off Ted. It was actually a pretty funny sitcom. And there's two main characters, they kind of have that will they or won't they vibe. And then they finally profess their quote-unquote love for each other, but they're in hazmat suits. And they try to kiss each other through the plastic, but it doesn't work. And I immediately thought about how this is definitely the comedic version of... Of the Voyager situation.
Yeah, that is essentially it right there. That's
that
fantastic.
Is it. That's great.
One thing I loved about them both was that they were both very strong personalities, and yet they complemented each other. Because mm-hmm. you had Tom to basically calm B'Elanna down with her temper, but then you've also got B'Elanna to kind of keep Tom grounded in reality a little bit. I mean,
yeah.
Let's be honest, sometimes he was not the best boyfriend. He was off in the holodeck playing a lot.
With his camera.
And, you know, she's doing a lot of sweet things for him. She makes him a TV, and, you know, he watches it until she's long since fallen asleep. I mean, she's putting up with a lot here. And, you know, the thing is, though, is I like that imperfection, because that's a real relationship. And she calls him on it. So you have to work those things out when you're in a relationship, and I'm not faulting the guy for it. I just think that was awesome, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. They do play off
yes.
one another
yes.
really well.
Yes, it makes sense, and therefore I like it.
Mm-hmm. It's a believable and good relationship.
It is, and Star Trek does not do that all the time.
No, not all the time. It is not always consistent. While we're talking about Tom and B'Elanna, you can't talk about Tom without talking about Miral. Now, she was the second baby to be born on Voyager. She definitely helped define the relationship well before she was born. And she was the fourth of Tom's children and the first of B'Elanna's.
Let's not forget those lizard babies.
Yeah. I was like, what? Oh, yeah. Don't forget me.
When I was looking up Tom on Memory Alpha, it's so funny because they put marital status, married, spouse, B'Elanna Torres, children, one daughter, Miral Paris, three hyper-evolved human children. That's so brilliant.
I've never noticed that. I've got to look that up.
Yeah, so he shags the captain, has some lizard babies, and they just go on like normal because, you know, you can walk away from that with a totally normal relationship with your captain.
Absolutely. Clear conscience, nothing.
That happens every day somewhere.
Every day.
to close this conversation up, I'm so glad that they made B'Elanna pregnant and they kept Tom and B'Elanna together because I'm at the age where all of my friends are having children.
Yeah.
And all of my family members are coming up to me asking me when I'm going to have children.
Yeah.
Fun.
Which is really fun. Oh. Like, everyone should do it. everyone should go up to your family members and random strangers and say, when are you going to have unprotected sex? And it's really their business. But anyway, I really did like that they had them get together. They flirted. They dated. They were engaged. They married. And they had a baby. I mean, it was just, we've never seen that in Star Trek before. We've never seen that full fruition of a...
Not as fully as Keiko and O'Brien.
They're painful to watch. Sorry.
It's just...
Said it. There it is.
Okay. It's just that with Keiko and O'Brien, when they were on Next Generation, we barely saw them.
Yeah.
Well, yes, that's what I mean. Not as fully developed. We saw them go through these stages, but we didn't get the details like we did with Tom and B'Elanna.
And so you are right. We definitely had their relationship fleshed out, but I feel like we got to see more intimate details with Tom and B'Elanna.
I just knew that if I didn't bring that up, we would get people on the forum saying, well, what?
You're very right. You're very right. But anyway, the reason why I bring it up and talk about people my age having children is that it defines your relationship and it defines you as a person. You're no longer just a boyfriend or a husband, you are a father in the marriage. You know, you focus your relationship from each other to the person that you created. And I love that Harry was like, hey, we're going to get home soon. Tom's like, I don't care. I've got a good job here, a good wife, and a baby on the way. And that defined his character to me.
That's such a good point. Yes,
that is a good point.
So many people on Voyager did want to go home to the Alpha Quadrant. But Tom and B'Elanna were really one of the few that had nothing to gain by coming back to the Alpha Quadrant. Mm-hmm. They had their lives on Voyager. That was their home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were perfectly content to just keep on going.
Okay, well, that is our take on Thomas Eugene Paris, one of my favorites and also beloved by the ladies of To the Journey and by many ladies everywhere else.
Oh, very much. you might want to listen to a little episode of Trek News and Views where not only did we have Lori, but we had Kate and we had Anna take over Trek News and Views for a week and talked about Tom Paris and Robert Duncan McNeil. But then a couple weeks later, we got to interview the man himself.
That was so fun.
That was one of the biggest highlights of my year, if not my life. Seriously.
Well, we're definitely going to put that in the show notes.
He was an awesome, awesome guy.
Yeah, I love Robert Duncan McNeil, and he's the only person who could have played this role. So we're definitely going to put that in the show notes so you guys can listen to it. Just go to trek.fm/TTJ, and you will find it. Thank you so much for listening. I do believe, Char, you have a shout-out for us.
I do. We have another 5-star review on iTunes, so I want to give a big thank you to TheFace022. Thank you so much.
Now, next week, we have another listing episode for you. I love these things. All three of us are going to come up with three episodes that are our favorites of what we think are the strongest character-driven episodes in Voyager. Now, a lot of you naysayers out there say that Voyager was not strong in the character department, but we obviously disagree, and we're going to prove it to you mm-hmm. with three examples each.
That is right. We will prove you wrong.
That's right.
Thank you so much for listening. Please go to iTunes, give us a rating. It'll help us get more listeners, help us get noticed. And please, if you'd like to give us a show idea, go to trek.fm/contact. From there, you'll be able to talk to us. And also, please go to the forums, talk about this show, get some discussion going. It's so much fun. Thank you as always, and this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey.
To the Journey.